resume the title board meeting from this morning. Just for the record, for those that weren't present, I'd like to talk a little bit about the procedures that we follow in the title board. First, we'll hear from proponents and make sure the title board members understand the measure and ask questions if necessary to understand the measure. Second, the board will consider whether whether we have a jurisdiction to set a title, and that includes determining whether the measure complies with the single subject requirement of the Constitution. And then third, if the board determines that it has jurisdiction to set a title, then we will proceed to work off of a staff draft, which is a copy of which is on the table by the back door. If anybody wishes to testify, we do have sign-up sheets on the table by the back door, so please do sign up. We're not concerned with the merits of any proposal, but just with the setting of fair and proper titles. With that, I don't know whether I announced for the record, but the time is 1:33 p.m., June 6th, I think. So let's turn to the agenda item for this afternoon. This is 2007-2008, number 31, Prohibition on Discrimination and Preferential Treatment by Colorado Governments. If we could, I'd first like to hear from the proponents. Mr. Westfall, are you representing proponents?
Mr. Hobbs.
You'll identify yourself for the record, and if you have any opening remarks, please give them to us, and we'll also see if the board members have questions for you.
Richard Westfall. I'm with the law firm of Hale Friesen. Next to me is Valerie Orr, one of the proponents. I'm here today representing the proponents.
If you don't have any opening statements, I'll see if the board members have questions about the measure. Questions from the board?
Go ahead.
I think I have one question. In this first subsection that prohibits discrimination or preferential treatment, it says on the basis of race, sex, color, et cetera. Is it solely on those bases, or is that simply discrimination or preferential treatment in which that is a factor? One of those prohibited attributes is a factor.
I'm not sure I understand your question.
Well,
would you repeat it please?
And I think I saw this possibly as one of the review and comment questions as well, so if that helps. But in other words, is discrimination prohibited solely on that basis, or can there be is it simply prohibited to be for those to be factors at all? You know what I'm saying? It's not a very clear question, but
okay, it says against or grant preferential treatment too. So you're not referring to that. Are you referring to the public employment, public education, or public contracting?
I think the example was: could somebody give points in preferential treatment? In other words, if it simply wasn't necessarily decisive, but for example, somebody just like veterans' preference points, that would be a form of preferential treatment. That if it's on the basis of one of these prohibited categories, would be prohibited by the measure. Is that correct? A point system that awarded points for things that included, minority status or something like that.
I guess the answer to the question, I would be happy to have the proponent, who actually is the proponent of the measure, whisper in my ear and provide any further clarification. But I think if the points are used to grant preferential treatment in the area of either public employment, public education, or public contracting, it depends on how the points are used. If the points are used to, in fact, grant preferential treatment within one of those three areas, yes, in fact, this measure would address that. Okay. Okay, I missed the question then. Okay. Thank God the proponent is here who knows. As opposed to just having a lawyer standing up here and talking, it's only with respect, as she's pointed out, it's the context in which or the situations in which would arise when you have preferential treatment concerning race, sex, color, ethnicity, or national origin. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think so. It's not, Mr. Domenico.
I think the question basically boils down to: is this intended simply to prohibit some kind of a quota system or requirement of certain percentage of contracts or those sort of things be awarded to people in these groups, or is it intended to prohibit any kind of preferential viewing of these traits, review of these traits at all in consideration of awarding employment, education, or contracting? So do you see, I mean, the difference, it seems to me, there's a difference between saying we're prohibiting a quota system as opposed to saying you can take these into account, but you can't make them the final decision-making point. I think that's basically what you answered, but I just was rephrasing the question.
I think you're probably right, Domenico. The only issue that I would quibble with is I think that implicit in your question is sort of an intent to sort of get around and sort of monkey with a sort of operational level of, like, we're dealing with points, or, you know, you get in what category, and this is, you know, who gets what jobs and how we're going to. I think this the point here, and I think, you know, is to get, you know, to get it back up. This is truly designed to be a basic constitutional principle along the lines of due process, equal protection, something very, very simple, very overarching. Yes, it'll in all likelihood be applied in a number of situations in these three general areas: public employment, public education, or public contracting. But we're trying to create have an addition to the Colorado Constitution that creates a very simple overarching proposition, and then have it applied however it needs to be applied by the various instrumentalities of government that will have to effectuate.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fairly clear on its face that it would, in effect, prohibit not only a quota system, but also sort of any kind of consideration. To the extent that it helps anyone in that process, it's preferential treatment. So I think it's fairly clear just from using preferential treatment, that's what that would mean. So I just wanted to make sure we're all on the same page.
Let me ask another question that, I don't know, maybe this is not a very helpful question either, but would this have any effect on bilingual education programs? Could that possibly be preferential treatment on the basis, I don't know, of national origin in public education?
Let me consult with my I guess the answer to your question is I don't really know for sure. It's certainly not intended to address bilingual education. The effect, you know, whether or not some aspect of a bilingual education program may have in it something that would constitute, or someone would argue would constitute, preferential treatment as part of the program. I guess that's conceivable. I just don't know. I mean, that's certainly not the intent of the measures to address bilingual education in this measure. It's to, again, getting back up to this high level of, you know, no discrimination, no preferential treatment. That's really what we're just trying to do here, is get that simple principle added to the Colorado Constitution.
Thank you. Any other questions for proponents? If not, let's.
I just had a question about subsection 3. Just trying to figure out if there's something in particular that the proponents have in mind in subsection 3. Is it sort of restroom, male, female restroom type things, or is there something more than that?
An example that we would use would be, for example, prison guards and who, you know, who does strip searches on who, that sort of thing. There's some areas that clearly you want a man doing a job and you want a woman doing a job. And that's what that's designed to do, is say we're not trying to override that in this measure.
Okay.
And I had a question about subsection 7 also. It says the remedies shall be the same as are otherwise available for violations of then existing Colorado anti-discrimination law. does then existing refer to existing existing on the date of the effective date of this measure, or what does then existing mean? Or existing at the time of the violation?
I think I understand your question. I hope I have an answer for you. It's what, you know, whatever the body of law would be that existed prior to this measure. I mean, this measure obviously creates new. I mean, we're not changing the. I guess what let me rephrase this. Well, we're not changing any remedy scheme for discrimination laws. We're merely injecting a principle of discrimination.
So, and I'm sorry for being dense here, but it's really at the time of the violation. I mean, prospectively. I mean, so that a remedy, regardless of what the remedy is, it has to be non-discriminatory. In other words, a remedy for preferential treatment would have to be the same, for example, as a remedy for anti-discrimination. I'm sorry for being difficult.
What I'm having trouble with, and what I would probably want to go back, and I'm not sure. I think I just have to withhold an answer on this to be. I don't want to give a misleading answer or an erroneous answer. And the way I'm interpreting this language then existing is not, it's not a temporal measure, and I don't think in any way it would obviate or undermine the legislative power to further flesh out what are remedies for violations. That's the province of the General Assembly as the policymaking body to do that. I think what we're just merely acknowledging here in this measure is just saying that there's a body of law out there that's been mostly generated by the General Assembly that creates a number of remedies for discrimination, and we're just saying nothing in this measure is trying to monkey with that. I think that's, for want of a better way of characterizing it.
Okay. Thank you. Let's then turn to the question of whether the measure complies with the single subject requirement. And I don't know, Mr. Westfall, do you have any comments about that? I want to hear from opponents if there are any that on that issue, but do you have any comments on that issue?
I think single subject's clear, Your Honor.
Do you, with the single subject, the staff draft expresses the single subject as concerning a prohibition against discrimination. And is that a fair statement of the single subject in your view?
Yes.
And would it be fair to say, continue to put words in your mouth, the measure prohibits discrimination against or preferential treatment, but would it be fair to say that preferential treatment is a form of discrimination?
That is correct. They're flip sides of the same coin.
Okay, therefore.
Which is fairly clear. I mean, it's the state putting its thumb on the scale and affecting an outcome, either pushing in favor of someone or harming someone. And they're just flip sides of the same coin. The shorthand of discrimination that you have before the in connection therewith language pursuant to the.
Broad enough to cover preferential treatment?
Yes.
Okay.
We believe so.
Okay. If there are no other questions for Mr. Westfall, then let me hear if anybody wants to oppose the measure on the basis of single subject. Please come forward and identify yourself and who you represent.
Afternoon, Mr. Chairman. Edward Ramey. I'm representing three individuals, Polly Baca, who is here, and Ron Montoya, who is in the back, and Christy Schloss, who is not here with us today, or three opponents to this initiative. And notwithstanding that my old adversary and good friend, Mr. Westfall, is involved, we do have a few problems with this. And I'll confine, I guess, my comments right now if this is what the board would like to do with single subject issues. We do think there are a variety, I'm sure this won't surprise the board, but a variety of single subject concerns with this. And a couple of the questions from the board have already sort of focused in or alluded to a couple of these issues. Let me just start with one. And I want to apologize ahead of time because some of these concepts may mesh a little bit, and if I get confusing, sure you'll help me clear that up. But number one is the concepts of prohibiting discrimination and prohibiting preferential treatment. They aren't the same thing. They're very different things. They're lumped into one measure here. And I guess I want to respond to this or address this on a couple levels. Number one, even if we view preferential treatment, whatever it is, and I would note that we heard at the review and comments session, we've heard here again this afternoon, that this is a broad concept, whatever preferential treatment might be. But in its narrowest incarnation, where it arguably could involve some kind of a conferral of an advantage on a group that would disadvantage another group, it is frequently used as a remedy for prior or then existing discrimination. So preferential treatment itself suggests remedy discrimination. I can assure the board that all three of the people that I represented myself as an example, I think this would be fairly logical, are people that would readily vote in favor of a measure that prohibited discrimination, whatever that may mean. And there's a concept there, and a measure of that nature could be floated. I think all four of us, the three people I represented myself, would also vote assuredly against all or part of a measure that would prohibit preferential treatment, particularly if the preferential treatment, whether or not it disadvantaged another group, was designed to remedy or eliminate or stop discrimination. What this measure does is it conflates the two, and it forces people like me to, in order to oppose discrimination, I have to also oppose preferential treatment. That's log rolling in its classic sense. There's no particular reason why either of those concepts can't be separately presented, but here the voting public is being required, if they wish to vote to prohibit discrimination as a state constitutional matter, they also have to vote to prohibit a remedy for discrimination, which is how preferential treatment's been used. So I'll have that concept. I'll sort of run through these, and the board wishes to interrupt anyone, please do. There are cases, I think it goes to a point Mr. Domenico was circling around a little bit, where preferential treatment might not involve an action that disadvantages another group. It might not involve, for example, a quota. Maybe it involves something that we think less in terms of things like what we might call reverse discrimination, but more in terms of something like affirmative action. For example, recruiting policies that go out into the community to attempt to generate interest in students who might apply to a particular educational institution or something of that nature. If that is being done in a minority community, my daughter, who happens to be a white female, or myself as a white male, is not necessarily disadvantaged by that, other than that perhaps I have more competition to get in. There's nothing discriminatory whatsoever, reverse discriminatory or anything else of that nature. That's a somewhat different concept that I would submit to the board as being hidden, not intentionally. I'm not going to suggest bad faith or be pejorative about it, but it's a concept that's being hidden in here. We are being forced, in order to vote against discrimination, to vote against that kind of remedy or social tool, as well as social tools that, through an arguably discriminatory or disadvantaging mechanism, might affect somebody, but thereby remedy discrimination. The basic concept, and I suppose, by the way, there might be people out there who might be in favor of discrimination and opposed to preferential treatment. I don't know. I suspect, frankly, as illogical as that may seem to somebody from my perspective, I suppose there very well may be people for whatever reason may have those feelings and are being compelled to vote sort of the flip side of what I'm being compelled to vote for. And that sort of log rolling is not permissible. So at a minimum, those two concepts need to be split apart. Secondly, and here's where I'm going to mesh some concepts a little bit, there are three different areas that are affected here: public employment, public education, and public contracting. Those are three different areas, and unlike the old parental rights initiative, which I always struggle with and lick my wounds over, I guess, to many years later. These three concepts have very different implications to them if you are affecting either discrimination or preferential treatment. And let me try to, I guess, give the primary example, and it arises out of the Section 3, which Mr. Hobbs, I think you were speaking to, if I recall, which is the bona fide qualification based on sex issue. There is a concept in the area of employment that has been recognized under federal constitutional law, and the board is aware of it, referred to as bona fide occupational qualifications, BFOQ, as I've been told the moniker of that is. And it's the sort of thing that was just described, the female prison guard who is responsible for the intake of female prisoners. That is a bona fide occupational qualification. It in itself is a form of discrimination. It's a sanctioned and authorized form of discrimination. One may discriminate on the basis of sex in the area of employment if there's a bona fide reason for doing so under various standards set by the United States Supreme Court. That concept, to my knowledge, has not been extended into other areas outside of employment. It is in this measure. It's extended into contracting and education as well. What this is doing is, in those areas, effectively creating a new form, authorizing sanctioning, in the context of an initiative that is presumably has its principal purpose to prohibit discrimination. It is sanctioning a new form of discrimination in areas where that has never been recognized before. And Section 3 does that. So as a voter, not only am I being compelled to vote, in order to vote against discrimination, I'm being compelled to vote against remedies for discrimination. I am also being compelled to vote for creation of an exception to the prohibition on discrimination, which effectively creates new forms of discrimination. And what brings that about is the fact that we've got these three separate areas to which this applies. I sort of meshed two concepts there. I think we've got the three separate areas, and we have the sanctioning of this new form of discrimination. Finally, a question that was asked by the board, and Mr. Hobbs, I think this was you, it might have been Mr. Domenico, about bilingual education goes back to a point that I was making before. I don't know, and I think the proponents have just made it fairly clear that they don't really know either what's being covered by this. This could cover bilingual education. It could cover recruitment policies. It could cover, I suppose, health programs that are specifically directed toward that are gender specific. It could incorporate public support for educational institutions for whatever reason may happen to be racially, ethnically, or gender imbalanced in some fashion or another. All of these could turn to be preferential treatment, and again, by the conflation of these concepts, we're being required to vote for or against everything. So I think, and I'll sort of wrap up with this, there are a number of sort of meshed issues in here, but at core, I think what it comes down to is the basic issue. It's more than this, but in my view, in subject to some other speakers may say, the principal problem from a single subject perspective is that this poses itself as a vote for prohibitions upon discrimination. And in so doing, the voters are being compelled to vote against remedies for discrimination and things that have nothing to do with discrimination that may benefit minority or other populations, whether or not disadvantaging somebody else. However we define preferential treatment, as narrow as you want to make it, just take it down to reverse discrimination. It's still a remedy for discrimination, or make it broad so it includes bilingual and everything else. I'm being compelled to vote to prohibit that, just so that I can vote against discrimination. I mean, that is about as classic a case of log rolling as can be imagined. At a minimum, if the proponents want to do this, and I wouldn't suggest for a moment that the proponents cannot submit an initiative to the people of this state that that involves prohibition of discrimination, or another one that involves prohibition of whatever preferential treatment is, wide, narrow, tall, short, whatever. They can do that, but they can't do it in one measure. I'll stop at that point, subject to any comments or questions the panel might have.
Let me ask you about the log rolling point. I expose some ignorance here about discrimination law right now. I think the premise is that people would want to vote against discrimination, would want to vote in favor of a measure that prohibits discrimination on the basis of race, sex, color, ethnicity, or national origin. Discrimination on those bases already prohibited by law?
I think so, for the most part in Colorado. I think to that extent there's a redundancy in this, but that, I'm not sure that's a single subject issue, but yes. I think discrimination of that nature probably is prohibited by law. And having said that, I vote against it again, or I vote in favor of prohibiting it again. But I don't want to be compelled to vote to sort of defang the remedies for it, which this does. To the extent, for example, that I'm going to use the term preferential treatment, is utilized as a remedy for what is already prohibited, I'm now being forced to vote to take away that remedy.
Well, maybe there's a question along these lines that I really should have asked Mr. Westfall, and perhaps I will. But, I mean, to the extent that this measure is redundant on the discrimination side, and the real effect has to do, the primary effect has to do with prohibitions against preferential treatment, not the only effect, but the primary effect. Is there anything wrong with proponents in having a broader measure that, on a subject of, and you heard Mr. Westfall express the viewpoint that it's all about discrimination, either in favor of or against, that discrimination is a term that's broad enough to cover whether it's used against somebody or in favor of somebody. But is there anything wrong with proponents having a measure that includes, that incorporates existing law, and the real effect is the real change in the law is only a kind of a subset of the overall scope of the measure?
I think there is, Mr. Hobbs. You and I are starting in a little bit of an exercise of predicting the effect of this thing, which I know some degree we shouldn't do here, because I don't know. I really don't know the answer to your question as to what the effect would be. I have to presume that this measure will have some effect, that this measure is not simply to state that existing law will be recognized. There's something more there, and I think that's a fair presumption. I think one that the courts would accord, that this measure was intended not to be simply useless surplusage. It was intended to be something. To the extent there's a micron of anything that this measure does that existing law does not already fully adequately cover, I think the courts would stretch to find that. Otherwise, this measure means nothing if you take that interpretation. But to the extent there's a micron of additional effect, then I'm being forced to vote in order to vote for that micron, I'm being forced to vote for something else that I adamantly am not in favor of. So, I can't follow you with your prediction, Mr. Hobbs, because I just don't know. I just have to presume, and I think it's a fair and right presumption, that this measure on the discrimination side is intended to prohibit something that's not already fully prohibited, even if nothing more than raising it from a statutory to a constitutional level. That's enough. Change that.
Well, and I'm just trying to think it through. On the one hand, I think I see that, there are potential concerns here that the measure is misleading or constitutes log rolling, or, I'm not sure that there may be a problem on that side. On the other side, it seems like where you're headed is that proponents can only propose measures that, to the extent that change the law, they can't incorporate.
I don't mean to suggest that they can't propose. I mean, proponents can propose any measure they want to propose. I think they could take the discrimination side of this without any of the references to preferential treatment. Take the whole preferential treatment component out. I think they can propose a measure that incorporates the prohibitions on discrimination. I think the courts will struggle to find that it has some effect and it isn't just a useless restatement of existing law, but I think even then, even if that's all it were, they could do that. The problem is they have that other component in there. And when they do that, I have to assume as a voter that this is intended to have some effect. And I'm being yanked both ways at the same time, for and against a very very counter propositions. I'm being compelled to at least lend my voice to a measure that that weakens remedies for discrimination. At the same time, I'm voting at least as just a philosophic statement, if nothing else, in favor of prohibiting discrimination. And as a voter, I shouldn't be compelled to do that. Absolutely, should not be compelled to do that.
Mr. Domenico.
I have a handful of questions. I mean, to begin with, I'm struggling to conceptualize quite as clearly this distinction you seem very clearly to have in your head between preferential treatment and discrimination. And I think I'm gathering... I mean, I think you're, tell me if I'm wrong. You're saying discrimination is saying we're not going to give public jobs or public school education or public contracting to people because of their race, sex, color, ethnicity, whereas preferential treatment is solely a remedy for past discrimination that the government now realizes in the past it had these discriminatory policies, and so it says in order to help fix the problems we caused by our past discrimination, we are going to grant preferential treatment to these same, to members of these same groups. I mean, my question is, isn't Mr. Westfall right that those are just different words for the same thing?
Well, you've got two questions embedded in there. Let me sort of break them apart. First off, I don't think that, as far as I can tell, I mean, I'm being asked a little bit to maybe do what Mr. Westfall should be asked to do as representative proponents, what does preferential treatment mean? I am not at all comfortable that it just means what I let me just put a word in your mouth, Mr. Domenico, reverse discrimination, whether used, which I'm going to presume is used as a remedy for prior discrimination. I assume it includes that. Even with that narrow interpretation, and whether or not it is sort of a flip side of a concept, and I might debate with you whether it is, but put that aside. Even if we just take that narrow interpretation of preferential treatment as involving reverse discrimination to remedy prior discrimination, a voter of this state, like me and the people I represent, should not be required to vote for or against both at the same time, because one is in fact used to remedy another. Now, that's the first part. But the second part of what you're saying, and I want to be equally as adamant about this, what I'm hearing and what I'm getting from the review and comment hearing and what I see in that term, the term used here is not reverse discrimination, it's preferential treatment. What I'm hearing here today as well is it's something more than that. I presume, and I think it's a fair guess, that it includes affirmative action. I assume, for example, that it involves or may involve or could be interpreted to involve, and I as a voter have to take the risk that it is at least reasonably likely to involve programs that have no discriminatory, reverse discriminatory, inside-out discriminatory, any component to it at all. It's just a governmental program that in some way accords a benefit to one of these identifiable groups. Bilingual, and I'll tell you how bilingual could do it, because I thought your question, Mr. Benicom, was well-worded.
Mr. Hobbs.
Or is that Mr.
That's
Hobbs'
why it
question.
Was well worded.
I confuse the two of you constantly. But bilingual is a perfect example. I would guess that most bilingual education programs in this state are Spanish focused. I mean, is that some type of a conferral on a national origin or an ethnic group? I don't know. But I don't want to be forced to take that risk. I don't want to be forced to take that risk on recruitment programs, minority recruitment programs for anything in any of these areas.
Well, let me follow up then. I agree with you. Preferential treatment maybe is broader than discrimination, at least as you're defining discrimination and as you're defining preferential treatment. And I agree with you on your definition of preferential treatment. I think the most obvious way to read this is that it's an attempt to say the state has to essentially be colorblind in everything it does. You can't take into account race or any of these categories when you're making state decisions. I think that's what preferential treatment means. I'm not sure I agree with you that that's so much broader than what an average person thinking a prohibition on discrimination would mean. So my question then is, isn't, if discrimination is a subpart of attempting to create, to force the state to be colorblind in its decision making, and preferential treatment is the same, and as you define those things, you may favor one and not favor the other. And I agree, and I have in the past been very concerned about log rolling, but you and I have also discussed in the past on things that are much less related than those two concepts. For example, creating some new state entity or creating a new form of severance tax and relating that to these different kinds of funds. I may favor one and the other, but as long as they're basically the same, serving the same purpose, on this board, I'm not sure we have the authority, even though some people may wish they got to vote on different parts. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're not a single subject. And so if preferential treatment is broader than discrimination, why are they not still both part of the same single subject of prohibiting the state from taking into account people's race, ethnicity, color, sex when they make decisions?
I view this, I think it is fair to view the concept of discrimination as disadvantaging a group. At least that's how I view it. And I can't cite you a particular definition, but at least in my experience, Mr. Domenico, discrimination entails disadvantaging. And that is something that I think I and people would oppose. I think that's a component of this. Preferential treatment may or may not involve that. I'm going to be a little redundant here, but please bear with me, because I think the concepts are important. If you look at the concept of being colorblind, that's a different animal. We probably get into the waters too kind of analysis. And just because it involves water, does it really involve all the same things? If we had an initiative that talked about just being colorblind all by itself without the anti-discrimination piece of it, I think we'd be having that kind of a discussion, because it would involve provisions that disadvantage groups. But preferential treatment by according an advantage to one that necessarily comes out of the hide of another group. Well, but also not. And that's, so these aren't, I don't think these are the same concepts.
But I mean, there are only so many spots in public employment. There are only so many public contracts to be had. If you prefer one group over another, that necessarily means the other has fewer opportunities. How does that not fit within your
your definition of discrimination?
I think it is a very different concept, Mr. Domenico, to talk, for example, about quotas. Now, remember, I'm at a couple of levels here, so I'm going to go in reverse this time. To say we're going to impose a quota system on an institution of higher education in the state, and so many seats in the incoming class or so many professorships have to go to members of specified groups. Clearly, by doing that, you disadvantage whoever isn't within that quota system. I think it's very different to have a recruitment program. Just because somebody is out recruiting in the community, trying to get interest in people of that community to apply to this institution, perhaps to seek a professorship at this institution, I don't think one can say in any sort of direct sense that that disadvantages anybody else. I am not disadvantaged just because I have a competitor who's a member of a different group. I may be disadvantaged if that competitor, there's a seat just for him and not for me, or just for her and not for me. Now, I'll stop.
No, go ahead. No, go ahead. I want you to finish.
That's at the higher level. Again, I want to go down to the lower level, though, and I want to pick up your exact point. Let's say that we really are only talking about measures that directly disadvantage people. We're talking about discrimination versus quota systems. I'm still being asked to vote against discrimination and simultaneously to vote against a remedy for discrimination, the availability of a remedy for discrimination, and in fact to sanction a broader and new form of discrimination in these two other areas where bona fide qualifications have not previously been recognized. Even if you're right, Mr. Domenico, and we're gonna take the interpretation down to where it's sort of a waters two kind of case is how I would characterize, where we've got kind of a single binding concept. And I don't think this measure does that. But even if we do that, I'm still being placed in a log rolling situation. Of these measures is fine by itself, but I'm being forced to vote to prohibit something while at the same time weakening the remedies for the very thing that I'm voting to prohibit. I ought to be able to stop right there, I think, and say, you can't do that. That's what single subject is designed to prevent. Even if you want to put a colorblind sort of label on it, that's Waters II if you do that. That's classic Waters II. But this is broader than
that. It can't quite be that simple. It can't be so simple that we have to vote down every measure that comes in here where an opponent can point to two parts of it and say, I like this part and not this part, and therefore this is two subjects. It would make our job a lot easier, and there'd be a lot shorter ballots if that's what we did. But it can't just be that voting on something that you have to make a difficult choice between the perfect and the good, or voting for one part that you like and one part you don't like. I mean, the case law teaches us that as long as there's not conflicting purposes that the average person wouldn't see in there, that they're unrelated purposes. I guess your argument is these are essentially conflicting or unrelated purposes, right?
They are. Mr. Domenico, you just stated it much more, you do this frequently, much more eloquently than I managed to do, but absolutely.
Okay.
The idea of a vote against a vote this is kind of a double negative or double positive, but a vote in favor of prohibitions against discrimination is conceptually and directly opposed to the concept of a vote in favor of preferential treatment in the minds of a substantial portion of this electorate, because it is highly likely, I would submit, Mr. Domenico, and very common, that many of us who oppose discrimination want to preserve the remedies for discrimination. We don't want to weaken the remedies for the very thing we're being asked to vote against. That is a direct head-on conflict of two basic concepts.
Let me just ask you one final thing, because I think we're narrowed it down to where our real disagreement is. But an individual who has been discriminated against has certain remedies. These are group remedies for past group discrimination, right? Even under your terms, that this is group-based. This is group-based decision making, right? I mean, because the remedy for if I come in and say I've been discriminated against based on my color or ethnicity, and can prove that, the remedy is not that I get preferential treatment based on that. It's an individual remedy. My whole family doesn't get some reward. I get back pay or whatever. I mean,
I don't know. I think it depends, Mr. DeMenico. These are judicially formulated remedies. You may be absolutely correct.
Some of them are. But one could can, as state law does, outlaw discrimination without creating the remedy of a group-based remedy. Outlaw discrimination against individuals without mandating these particular remedies.
Or you're rewriting the measure.
No. What you keep saying is you would like
measure.
To vote. You want to enshrine non-discrimination, and you would vote in favor of that.
Yes.
But you don't want to make it illegal to create group-based remedies. And I'm just saying that there are still remedies. You can have remedies for discrimination without them being group-based preferential treatment.
I think you're quite likely correct, but you are the first part of what you said is more basic and more to the point. I don't want to be compelled to vote in order to vote in favor of prohibiting discrimination. I don't want to be compelled to vote in favor of eliminating a group remedy for discrimination, and I most assuredly don't want to be compelled to vote in favor of eliminating and prohibiting programs that may not even be designed to address past discrimination, but may in fact have an impact that one could view as according a preference to an identified group. In a bilingual program, a gender-based program such as a prenatal program paid for by the state, which certainly has no discriminatory nexus one way or the other, nevertheless benefits a group based on sex. I don't know whether this covers that or not. I'm hearing today it might. I don't want to, as a voter, have to take the risk for that. Now, I'm happy if the proponents want to present an initiative that says we will not have preferential treatment, and hopefully somewhere in the context of developing legislative history tell us what they're talking about. They have a right to go before the voters. But they don't, I believe, Mr. Domenico, have the right to go before the voters with that large concept, or even a more narrow concept, and hook it on to a prohibition against discrimination. That, however you define it, taking any of those arguments you just presented, I shouldn't be put in a position as a voter where I have to make that choice. That's what the single subject requirement is designed to keep us from doing. I'm not saying it's good or bad policy. I'll take for the moment that it's great policy. But I shouldn't be forced to do that. And we're being forced by this measure to do it. And these are patently, at best, they are conflicting, related but conflicting measures. At worst, they are unrelated measures, such as the example I just gave you, within a single measure. Though I'm being argumentative. That's the nature of the form. Well, you and I have been down this road before.
Mr. Carton?
You said two quick questions, and I think one of them may be for the chairman. I just wanted to follow up on the discussion of this measure putting in the Constitution what may already be the law under the discrimination law, and I wasn't quite sure where you were going with that, but I guess, and this is going to show kind of my inadequacy in this subject matter, but, and I know you didn't say this, Mr. Hobbs, but I'll just pose the question here. Is it accurate or inaccurate to say that the prohibition against discrimination in subsection 1 is more or less an affirmation of the current state of law, and that the prohibition against granting preferential treatment is a change?
When I was thinking out loud about that, I was sort of focusing on whether or not there was an issue about misleading voters to the extent that the bulk of the measure arguably is enacting something that's already both supported and the law, prohibitions against discrimination. And I was thinking it through more in terms of not log rolling, I think, but surprise, you know, and I don't know, misleading voters. And when it's sort of like the Trojan horse. I mean, here's this great, wonderful thing we're doing, but in reality, there's the real effect is something, you know, while you're prohibiting discrimination, what you're really doing is prohibiting preferential treatment. And I'm not articulating this very well, but I was thinking about it not so much in terms of log rolling per se, but kind of is there just are we misleading voters somehow? Is there an intent to mislead voters? And it does dovetail with, I think, with some of the things that Mr. Ramey is saying. I guess in, you know, with the benefit of subsequent discussion, I'm thinking of it less in those terms and more in terms of, as Mr. Domenico was referring to it, is does it mean that, you know, that does it come down to the fact that if voters are presented with a measure that includes something they like and something they don't like, is that, you know, is that log rolling and is that prohibited? And I've sort of shifted my focus. I'm probably not articulating it very well, but I somehow was going from the sort of the Trojan horse argument to just simple, are there multiple things, you know, multiple subjects on the basis of log rolling?
And Mr. Hobbs, can I respond to that, or Mr. Carton? I'm not sure I understood your thought process, Mr. Hobbs. At the beginning, either way you look at it, it will not surprise the board that I have a problem with this. The reason I'm sort of, I guess, focusing back to the presumption, which may be just completely wrong, that there's some kind of change involved. Right now, I'm sort of focusing less on misleading, and I suppose we can spend May this afternoon a lengthy period of time dealing with the title, because, and I do think this is a Trojan horse. I would submit that what I'm seeing here is an effort that's an effort to enact an anti-preferential treatment measure on the basis in the guise of an anti-discrimination measure. I think that is indeed what's going on. So there is a misleading component, but what in the context of what we're talking about right now, I think that's relevant to single subject as well. It sort of exacerbates the problem. But what's bothering me here is even more basic than that, is that whatever the degree of change, if any, may be in the area of discrimination law, even if that change is nothing more than constitutionalizing the civil rights or statute, it is still, there's that piece, there are those words, there's that stuff, there's something there, misleading or not, I think it is misleading, but misleading or not, and it's dragging this other piece along behind it. And I'm not suggesting, you know, Mr. Domenico keeps talking, well, it's all about being colorblind, and Mr. Domenico, I mean, you're absolutely, you know, correct, but we have antithetically opposed concepts here, again, at best, and inconsistent concepts at worst, without reiterating the conversation that we just had, that are being drug along behind this, whatever this discrimination concept is. I mean, I can't think of anything that is more violative of what single subject requirement is designed to prevent other than something like Tabor, you know, and what, you know, Tabor would not have passed because it dealt with taxes and debt. I suppose we could say it all had to do with government finances. But we have different concepts in there. Outside of that, I mean, this is the classic example of log roll. This is the classic example where voters are being compelled to vote one way to get an advantage another way, and not just because there's certain things they like or dislike in the measure. I think you're absolutely correct. That's true of most any measure we see before us. But these are two basic, antithetical, conflicting concepts, and they're being shoved down our throat together. And they ought to come down, if they're going to come down at all, one at a time.
And let me respond to that and also sort of clarify something that Mr. Carton was asking me. I guess I'll first take another run at that, and I'm looking at 1-40-106.5, which is the General Assembly's explanation of why they referred the single subject amendment to the people, I think, in 1994. And they said the purpose of the single subject amendment is to prevent two practices. And the second one that's listed is to prevent surreptitious measures. And that's more of where I started out, what I refer to as Trojan horse, is somehow you're misleading people about what this is really about, because the real effect has to do with preferential treatment.
55 said that last year. Not to interrupt, Mr. Chairman, I apologize, but I think that was, I'm probably getting around to the question Mr. Domenico asked me about 2 months ago, but he didn't show up for the hearing in that case. So what did 55 mean? That, I think, was what the court was trying to say in 55, exactly what you just said.
Well, and so in any event, that's one of the things that the single subject amendment is supposed to prohibit is surreptitious measures, and to prevent, and part of that language says to prevent surprise and fraud being practiced upon voters. The other one, which I think Mr. Ramey is focusing on, is, it says, which, because I think it includes the concept of log rolling, says to forbid the treatment of incongruous subjects. And let me read the whole thing, because I think this sort of defines what log rolling is. To forbid the treatment of incongruous subjects in the same measure, especially the practice of putting together in one measure subjects having no necessary or proper connection, and that's key, I want to come back to that, for the purpose of enlisting in support of the measure the advocates of each measure and thus securing the enactment of measures that could not be carried upon their own merits. I think that's what I think of as log rolling. But to me, the key thing is we're talking about two things that have no necessary or proper connection. Now, I understand the point of view that prohibitions against discriminating against an individual or group is quite different than a prohibition against preferential treatment. I mean, I understand the point of view, but I also understand the opposite point of view, from the point of view of the proponents, these are interrelated, if not identical, concepts, that discrimination against or discrimination in favor is, in that point of view, the same thing. And at least it's not, I mean, in my mind, at least at this point, it's those two subjects, if it's two subjects at all, I can't say they have no necessary or proper connection. And even if I had the different point of view that they, in my mind, they're two separate things, I have to respect the fact that I think the proponents, in their minds, are, you know, there is another point of view that I think is reasonable. There is a connection between the two. And if the proponents choose, because of that point of view, to prohibit both forms of discrimination, if you will, I'm just adopting what I think is that point of view, it seems to me that it's not up to the board to say you can't have that point of view. You have to have our point of view, which is these are two separate things. Again, I'm not expressing it very well, but I see a connection.
Let me respond to that. Two things. Number one, I would focus you on the second part of that phrase you just read as well, the effort to enlist support for one thing by, you know, hooking it, my vernacular, to another. That's exactly what's going on here, whether or not we've got, you know, related concepts. I do want to go back, though, with regard to the relatedness of these concepts. We're making a presumption here that sort of goes back to Mr. Domenico's and my exchange. If this, instead of saying preferential treatment, said reverse discrimination, I would probably still argue with the point with you
because they are so antithetical, and one is used as a remedy for the other. I would still argue the point with you, not probably. But this is a whole lot more than that, and we just heard it from the proponents this afternoon. This doesn't say reverse discrimination. It says preferential treatment. So you're picking up things like, and they can say we don't intend to pick things up like this, but that is certainly not in the legislative history debate and certainly did not come out despite invitation at review and comment. They're picking up things like recruitment programs. They're picking up things like financial support for institutions of one sort or another that happen to be, for whatever reason, imbalanced by group. They're picking up gender-based health programs, prenatal programs. That's all in there. It prefers one of these groups or another. This term is that broad. So I would address your point three ways. Number one, I'd pick an argument with you, Mr. Chair, with all due respect, on the discrimination, reverse discrimination issue by itself, because they're so antithetical. Number two, I'd focus in on the second half of the phrase you just read, which is there is a hook from one concept to another, and the first is dragging the second along. And that is that's the log rolling concept to me. I'm being compelled to support one major proposition by virtue of the fact that I want to support the other. And the third concept is they're using the term preferential treatment, which by everything that's been placed before us is broader than anything that has to do with discriminating against or disadvantaging any group whatsoever. And finally, I would come back to your Trojan horse as a fourth point as well. I mean, this is manifestly a Trojan horse. Now, by that, I'm not suggesting that the proponents can't do this. If they want to come to the voters of this state and say, we will not have reverse discrimination and we're going to vote against that, they have an absolute right to do it. And I would not stand here with a straight face and say, that's not what they're doing here. This is a different animal. And by virtue of the fact, let me just add another piece to that. Once I get going, slow down, I guess. Yeah, if you were a judge, you would sit me down by now. Mr. Westphal, I've given you plenty of time to crank up here. But the fact that the effect of this is indeed, on top of everything else, to sanction a new form of discrimination through the bona fide qualification section in and of itself, even though maybe what appears to be a small portion of this initiative, much like a Ref C issue that I went down in flames on for this board a few weeks back, a small component of this measure, the effect of that is to recognize a form of permitted gender-based discrimination in areas where it has never been recognized before, outside of the area of employment. It creates and sanctions a form of discrimination under the guise of prohibiting discrimination and in the context of an initiative that, interpreted in its most proponent-friendly fashion, is designed to prohibit discrimination. At the same time, it is prohibiting discrimination and sanctioning a form of discrimination. Now, again, they could do that small piece, that second piece, the bona fide qualifications piece of it, separately. They have a right to do that, to extend that concept into these other areas outside of bona fide occupational qualifications. It's okay, but they're doing it in the context of something that is prohibiting discrimination. I'm being forced to vote to prohibit discrimination while simultaneously I'm being forced to vote to sanction and enhance and constitutionalize a new form of discrimination that hasn't existed under the law of this state heretofore. That in itself, despite all the other discussion we've had, should be enough to stop this on single subject.
Any other questions for Mr. Ramey?
I have one last one. I think I've heard you basically say this, but if subsection 1 just took out discriminate against or, would you be okay? I mean, you've got this bona fide section 3, but I have to tell you, you're a very good lawyer, because I thought this was a very simple issue when I walked in, and you've convinced me it's not quite so simple. I don't think you've quite won me over. You haven't quite won me over. But leaving aside subsection 3, if this got rid of not discriminate against or and just said the state shall not grant preferential treatment
et cetera, and there weren't this subsection 3 problem, would you be okay with it?
I'm not sure.
On single subject?
I'm not sure I can answer that question because, as I think I've alluded, I don't know what preferential treatment is. I think with some legislative history, I might be. Not that I wouldn't vote against this. I would vote against this. But I think in terms of single subject requirements, given some narrowing legislative history, so I understood what preferential treatment meant, perhaps.
Okay.
But I'm stuck, A, in the... And that's kind of a different subject. I mean, I don't want to predict where we'd be if they come back with an initiative like that with no definition of what the dickens we're talking about. We may still have a problem with that, but there's an easy remedy for
single subject grounds, though, I'm asking.
Well, on single subject grounds, yeah, because I'm not sure what preferential treatment means. Just, I mean, that could be Waters, too. I mean, I don't know. I just don't know because I don't know what it means and they haven't told us. But that's an easier question, I guess, for you and me to address. We'd be debating Waters, too, without all these other bells and whistles. And the other bells and whistles are the hook to that discrimination phrase. And I can't rewrite this thing and take out the bona fide, the Section 3, the bona fide qualification. It's there.
All right,
now, if I want to go back and do it again and take it out, then that provision goes away.
Well, that section doesn't concern me at all. I mean, that's simply preserving existing law in that area and maybe preserving. Well, it is. I mean, it says nothing shall be interpreted as prohibiting it. It doesn't create any new bona fide. So if you're right that there's only currently one form of these qualifications, BFOQ, then that's all it preserves. If a court were to invent some in the future, then this would also recognize those. Without this section, I think, causing a problem there. That's all it seems to create for me, which is not a single set. Of course.
Mr. Benico, I mean, you can always say no, by the way, if you've heard enough of me. But I don't think it does that. I think when it says nothing in the section will be interpreted as prohibiting bona fide qualifications, which means that they may be adopted. This doesn't prohibit that.
This doesn't prohibit it. Something else might.
Well, something else might, but right. I don't know what. This won't prohibit it, and this... Right. Constitutionally sanctions that. Again,
I don't see where it constitutionally sanctions it. That's where you lost me.
Because they say as a constitutional matter, nothing in here that prohibits discrimination will prohibit the implementation of that kind of a measure by some governmental body. Now, I suppose the federal courts could come down under the U.S. Constitution and have something to say about that, but we're not really dealing with that. Nothing in this constitutional prohibition against discrimination prohibits the enactment or the adoption of forms of discrimination outside of areas in which they've already been recognized. Now, I suppose you and I could go round and round about that, but I mean, I think that legitimizes to some degree a form of discrimination. And I'm being asked as a voter to say okay to that while I'm opposing discrimination.
Okay, I see what you're saying. I understand what you're saying. I just it seems to me that this is just simply an attempt to avoid a problem that a court necessarily would run into down the road, which is we've recognized these bona fide qualifications in the past. Now you've got this new thing. How do those interact? And this simply says, well, those qualifications still exist in spite of this. That's all I read it as, and I don't see that as a separate subject.
Any other questions for Mr. Ramey? If not, Mr. Westfall, would you like to respond briefly?
There may be other opponents. I don't know.
And I don't know anybody else signed up, but is there anybody else who wishes to testify on the issue of single subject compliance? Oh, please come forward.
I haven't signed up, and I'm not going to be as eloquent as the two lawyers. But I just want to say that I think there's a difference.
I'm sorry for interrupting.
Oh,
would you identify yourself?
Mary Phillips.
Thank you.
I think that there's a difference between the public employment, public education, and public contracting areas that violate single subject, because some people might want to prohibit preferences in contracting or employment, but might think that equal opportunity for education is a good thing and get people the opportunity to go and get an education, and then they're on their own as far as hiring and employment goes. So there is some information to that effect in polling and so on. So I think those are three separate subjects.
Okay. Other questions for Ms. Phillips? Thank you. Would you mind signing up on this, on the, either this or one of the sign-up sheets in back? You can take that with you if you want.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else wishing to testify on the issue of single subject? I would like to give Mr. Westfall an opportunity to respond, if you wish, or to see if the board has questions of Mr. Westfall.
I'd be happy to answer any questions, Mr. Hobbs, Mr. Chairman. And also, but I do want to keep it really quick, short, because I think Mr. Ramey used up pretty much all of our time at this point on the single subject argument. With all due respect to Mr. Ramey, and again, I've dealt with him a long time, and he's an incredibly capable lawyer, and I have to applaud his effort to build a castle in the sky and not only, you know, move in, but it's got furniture, and I think it's got landscaping as well. But I think the really telling point was at the very end of this over-hour discussion of single subject where he said, in response to your question, Mr. Domenico, well, even if you take out the words and discriminate, I know I'm going to vote against it. What that suggests is, I think, just let's just take a moment and do something which I know is kind of hard in this area, and that's apply a basic level of common sense. What are we talking? Everybody knows what we're talking about. Everybody knows what this measure is designed to do. It's designed to create a basic constitutional principle that's very much along the lines that Mr. Hobbs described, and I didn't even want to, you know, repeat it because I think he said it best. This is very simple. It's discrimination, however you want to put it. It's discriminating against someone or it's discriminating against someone else. It's just eliminating government discrimination or putting a constitutional bar against that discrimination in a certain subset of areas. We're not talking about this is unlimited, this has massive scope, it could be administration over here, all of 55, or it could be, you know, it has tax consequences or what have you. It's a very simple principle. It's no different than equal protection. It's no different than due process of law. If what Mr. Ramey says is true, never again will the title board be able to establish a single subject for something like due process or equal protection, because we can go back and we can say, well, I want equal protection in some context, but I don't want equal protection in other contexts. I want due process of law in this area, but I think I want to interpret due process of law a different way in a different context. That's not what single subject is designed to do. This is one simple measure, and I would urge the title board to just use basic common sense and follow the basic construct that I think Mr. Hobbs basically described. I have no further to add. Thank you. Let, I'd be happy to answer questions.
Any questions for Mr. Westfall? Mr.
Domenico? I have one. A similar question that I asked Mr. Ramey at the end. If this didn't say not discriminating or, do you think it would have any different effect than it does as drafted? If it simply said the state shall not grant preferential treatment, would it have any different effect? Do you intend for, I don't want you to try to predict our courts especially, but would you intend, do you intend for that discrimination phrase to have any effect other than to kind of get people's attention and let them know they're talking about kind of these broad anti-discrimination principles?
What you just said, Mr. Domenico. And again, it's the flip sides of the same coin. We want to make sure that people understand that discrimination has two dimensions to it, preferential preferential two, and discrimination against. It's one basic, simple constitutional principle. And we want to make sure we're clear to the voters what it is we're talking about. And I don't think there's anybody, either anybody on the opponent's side or anybody that will be misled. There will be no log rolling. There's nothing surreptitious here. It's very clear. It's an up or down on this basic principle. We want government not to to either grant discriminated against or grant preferential treatment to based upon these following factors in these three contexts. Very simple.
Thank you. Anybody else from the public wishing to testify on the issue of single subject? If not, then I'll turn to board discussion or a motion.
Just for a little bit of discussion, I think, as I've indicated, Mr. Ramey's discussion has made this into a harder issue than I thought it was and should have been. But in the end, I think if I agreed with him that non-discrimination and no preferential treatment were diametrically opposed contradictory concepts, I probably would have to agree with him that this is two different subjects. But in the end, I think those are at least not necessarily opposed, and they certainly are related purposes. And so I sympathize with people in his position, and I sympathize that some people may wish to vote in favor of this as it applies to employment and contracting, as Ms. Phillips said, and not to education. For all I know, I might be one of those people, but in the end, when we're here simply to decide whether this fits with the single subject requirement, I think I have to vote that it does.
Mr. Garden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I agree with Mr. Domenico that Mr. Ramey's arguments, I'm not sure they're necessarily a castle in the sky. I think they're, on one level, I'll still be thinking about them when I head back to the Capitol. I think that there's an element of them legally that is compelling, and I certainly will give additional thought to in connection with probably future measures or if we see this one again. I do agree with Mr. Westfall, though, that there is a single subject here, and I think the single subject is stated in the section heading of the measure, non-discrimination by the state. I think it's adequately stated in the stat draft. I know we're not there yet, a prohibition against discrimination by the state. I think that that is the single subject that covers these two concepts, and I'm going to focus on those two concepts and the prohibition against discrimination and the prohibition against granting preferential treatment. Mr. Ramey said that these are antithetically opposed concepts and that they should be in separate measures. At this point, I don't agree with that. I think that they are separate concepts. I think that they may be separate purposes, but we've got case law that says that the measure can satisfy the single subject requirement if the text of the initiative encompasses a single subject, which I think it does, and the initiative does not attempt to further two or more unconnected purposes. And I think Mr. Domenico has said two or three times that he thinks that there is a connection, there is a relatedness between the two, and that's where I'm at, both under Section 145.106.5, the subsection 1E1 that Mr. Hobbs pointed out that speaks to forbidding the treatment of incongruous subjects, and especially the practice of putting together in one measure subjects having no necessary or proper connection. I'm not going to go so far as to say that under some circumstances antithetically opposed concepts can still have some necessary or proper connection, but I think that these two concepts in subsection 1 of the proposed section 31 do have connectivity and that there is a single subject.
And I agree with the comments from both Mr. Domenico and Mr. Carton. I'll go ahead and make a motion that the board find that there is a single subject and proceed to set titles for number 31. Is there a second?
I'll second the motion.
Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Let's turn to the staff draft. Ms. Gomez has displayed it on the screen in the room. And I'd like to first ask the proponents if they've had an opportunity to review the staff draft and if they have any comments about the staff draft. Mr. Westfall.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, the proponents have had an opportunity to review the staff draft. We think it's a perfectly fine workman effort and have no proposed changes at this time.
Can I ask a question? There's a couple of things, well, one or two things that I'm kind of wondering about. And this kind of goes back to the discussion we just had for almost an hour and a half. the expression of the single subject that currently reads concerning a prohibition against discrimination by the state. I'm still a little concerned that not quite sure how to characterize this, but the primary effect, to the extent that it's prohibiting preferential treatment, that I want to make sure that the titles, properly inform the voters of, what the measure does. And with respect to the title, I'm wondering to what extent Mr. Ramey's points are well taken in that simply saying discrimination might send the wrong message to voters about what the measure is about. Now, we go on in line three to say that. But again, it does seem to me there's two points of view about what discrimination is, and a point of view is that it's discrimination in the more classical sense, prohibiting discrimination against an individual or group on the basis of certain attributes. But the other point of view, which you have, I think, that includes preferential treatment, is not necessarily encompassed right up front in that expression of single subject. And I just don't know whether that's something that I should worry about or not. But I'm wondering if, for example, if we need to say something, concerning prohibitions against discriminatory or preferential treatment. And we don't normally like to use conjunctions in the expression of single subject, but that would be one way of signaling to the voters that this is a broad definition of discrimination. If we were to say concerning prohibitions against discriminatory or preferential treatment by the state, et cetera. I'm just wondering if you have any reaction to that.
I guess the answer to, and I'm speaking for the proponents, I think I really have a sense for where I think they're coming from. Where the proponents are coming from is preferential treatment is merely a clarification that we're talking about discrimination. Is that a fair? That's what we're talking about here. And so I don't think it's. I know we got, and again, I applaud Mr. Ramey's efforts in sort of getting this thing saying, we really want to, everybody is against discrimination, but now the real central focus is preferential treatment. Let's make that the central focus. While I can appreciate Mr. Ramey's advocacy in this regard, and I can certainly understand why he's doing that, and I can certainly understand, where he's going with trying to create multiple subjects and also try to create all the discussion that we've had now for the last over an hour. At the end of the day, I think getting back to, again, I'm up here today as the advocate for the proponents, and where they're coming from is we're talking about barring discrimination by the state and all the preferentials, the language it says, and prohibiting preferential treatment is merely to make it absolutely crystal clear so that there is no misleading, so there is no surreptitiousness of what's impacted. So that's why I agree with the staff draft being what it is. I also agree with you that, generally speaking, the history of the board is to avoid putting things like, or in before the magic language in connection therewith, because that's what this board does to determine whether something qualifies as single subject, and that's also going to be something that the Colorado Supreme Court is going to be looking at to make that determination. And obviously, I can understand from Mr. Ramey's standpoint and from the opponent's standpoint, wanted to do anything they can to put the thumb on the scale to try to make out their single subject challenge, which it looks to me is inevitable at this point in the Colorado Supreme Court. I resisted on that basis alone. I resisted on two bases. One is I think it's part of the game playing that we're dealing with and part of the advocacy that goes on single subject before both before this board and the Colorado Supreme Court, number one. And number two, I would resist it because I really do think that the basic core intent of the proponents who I'm speaking for is that we're just clarifying discrimination.
Okay. Let me ask you one or two other questions about the staff draft. Lines 8 through 10 include a clause that says defining state to include, et cetera, and it includes that. Do you think that's necessary? Is that a significant feature of the measure?
No, but we're comfortable with it.
And then in lines 10 and 11?
We have no objection to it. I don't think the title's unduly long, and I know most proponents that come before want to shorten it up as much as possible. I think we're indifferent one way or the other.
Okay. End of line 10, beginning of line 11, one of the clauses says, specifying remedies available for a violation of the measure. Do you think that's accurate, that it specifies remedies available for a violation of the measure?
Good question. Doesn't really specify, does it, Mr. Hobbs?
Pardon me?
Doesn't really specify in the measure itself, does it, Mr. Hobbs?
Well, it struck me that that might be misleading in the sense that the reader might think then that there's penalties set out in the measure itself.
You know, there's certain clauses in here to say we're not affecting the existing remedy scheme, if you will, but to say that the word specify may be a little bit strong in light of what the measure actually does, Mr. Hobbs, and I think that's a good observation.
Any other questions for Mr. Westfall? Thank you. Mr. Ramey, do you have some comments about the staff draft?
I said no.
As the proponents, may I respectfully petition for a time limit?
I suppose you can impose one.
Try to keep it brief.
I'm only partially kidding.
Mr. Westfall will get even with me, I'm sure, sometime shortly. We got a number of problems with this. No big surprise, but let me go first. I'm just going to jump ahead to the one, Mr. Hobbs, that I think you just stated. Without wading back into the single subject issue, the language of the measure itself reads, starts right out, the state shall not discriminate against, comma, or grant preferential treatment to, comma, single subject or not, those are two concepts. This could have started out, I'm going to flip what Mr. Domenico said to me a few moments ago, could have started out, the state shall not discriminate against any individual, blah, blah, blah. And then if that incorporates whatever preferential treatment is, then it would be incorporated into that concept. The language of the measure, the initiative itself, breaks those two out. And whatever the import of that, and as you've heard from me at length, I think the import is huge, but whatever the import of that, I would agree, Mr. Hobbs, with your allusion, and I think that has to be up front. There's a natural break in the way these, at least as I understand it, the way these titles work, and if they start out an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning something, then comma and in connection therewith and then various and sundry things have come after that. An allusion to preferential treatment absolutely has to happen before that phrase and in connection therewith. This is about, in large part, if not in primary part, preferential treatment. And I think that, the Trojan horse here, it's hidden down on the third line. It belongs up front. So I want to second, without grinding that too deeply, I do want to second the question or the allusion that you just made. I think that concept out and above everything else has to be up on that first line. Should I just go on and subject to interruptions?
Dave, if you have other suggestions about the staff draft, it would be helpful.
I do, Mr. Hobbs. Thank you. Let me take one that's a little generically different from the others that I want to state, and that is this phrase, preferential treatment. Preferential treatment is I really can't comment upon the history of the phrase, but it carries baggage. I'm going to submit to the board its catchphrase. Nobody, not even me, probably, is in favor of preferential treatment as sort of a disconnected concept. I know what it is, so I know, that in favor of what the proponents are trying to eliminate here, but preferential treatment suggests somebody is getting treated in a preferred manner that in some way is not justifiable, if you will. Preferential treatment carries We've had cases in the past, I can refer back to the bilingual, where learning, being taught English as quickly and efficiently as possible, whatever the language was. Other things historically that have been held to be catchphrases that would burden the board's time with that. Preferential treatment is one. And I realize it appears in the text of the measure, but the bilingual cases made it very clear that just because the concept is used in the text of the measure, that does not mean that it can be used in the title. If, in fact, it is likely to tilt voters to vote one way or another based on that particular language. And preferential treatment, I think, does that. So I'm going to submit it's a catchphrase. Mr. Domenico is about ready to leap at me, I can tell.
Well, just the only conceivable remedy for that would be to just refer to discrimination, wouldn't it? And I doubt you'd prefer just saying prohibiting the state from discriminating.
Well, right. If they want to do that, they'd have to change the measure. They could, I suppose, if this is what they meant, and the proponents have not shared this with us to even as yet, if they meant reverse discrimination, I suppose they could do something like that. There are a lot of things they could do. I don't want to write their measure or their title for them, but preferential treatment, that language, carries baggage.
I think the Supreme Court hasn't done us a lot of favors in any of this, but when there's an undefined term that's used in the measure, unless it's sort of truly a catchphrase, as in the kind of thing that's been a controversy or been used in advertising in the past and is kind of ginned up as simply a way to sell something, that's what I see as a catchphrase, whereas preferential treatment is, as you say, sort of an undefined term that carries some connotations, but I can't think of, I mean, I wasn't joking about, unless you're going to say it doesn't carry any meaning other than non-discrimination, I'm not sure how we would redefine it. And I know you think it means something very different than discrimination.
In part.
But I'm just assuming, as we have to now, that it's a single subject. What kind of words would capture the meaning, in your view, without being a catchphrase?
I don't know, Mr. Domenico. Let me respond in two ways. Number one, I don't know the answer to that question, because I don't know what the proponents mean.
What if they came in and simply had a measure that just said the state shall not grant preferential treatment to any individual or group, period?
Well, let me ask you,
we can't vote against that measure or setting a title just because it includes words we don't know the meaning of.
Let me answer your question that way. If they wanted to say confer a benefit upon or something of that nature, as opposed to preferential treatment, granting preferential. Perhaps, I mean, that's less of a catchphrase than this. So I'm not going to propose that. I mean, this isn't my measure, and I'm not drafting the title of this thing. But that would be better than preferential treatment. And I do want to take issue, Mr. Domenico, with all due respect, one thing you said. The old catchphrase cases from back around the turn of the last century, I think, were like that, an advertising slogan. I think the bilingual cases address precisely the point. And whether we agree with the state Supreme Court or not, that's law. And the language that was in effect there, I'm going to misstate it, I'm sure, by a phrase, but something like as rapidly and effectively as possible. And what the attempt of the text of the measure was to say that we want students to be taught English in this state as rapidly and effectively as possible. Now, I don't view that as a sales slogan necessarily. And in fact, that was somewhat integral to, I think, what the proponents of that measure were attempting to accomplish. But the court, whether we agree with it or not, said no. I mean, we all want people taught English rapidly as effectively as possible, and effectively as possible. We all want various other things that can only sound good. This one only sounds bad. Preferential treatment carries a bad connotation to it in our society. And I'll acknowledge that as readily as anybody else. I don't like that term.
preferential treatment.
I'm going to submit to the board, and we can continue to go round and round, but I've offered suggested language that I think carries less of an onus, but there is onus attached to that phrase. Now, it doesn't mean they can't have it in their measuring, but anything they want in their measuring. But I don't think this board can permit a phrase like that to appear in the title. It will influence a vote in favor of this measure to prohibit something that is viewed as negative.
Other issues with the staff draft, Mr.
Yes.
Engel?
And I will try to be short, and I apologize to the board about the length of this. There are other things that I think are as important as that are important and need to go ahead of that phrase and in connection therewith. None of the ones I'm about to suggest are as important as the one we just talked about and that Mr. Hobbs, you alluded to, and that is the reference to preferential treatment, which, using some other phrase now, as I've stated, I don't think you can use it, but that concept needs to be up there. That is essential, as it is for the same reason, whatever that reason may be, that it's broken out as a separate concept in the text of the measure itself. Other things that belong up there, it would seem to me, are the three points that Ms. Phillips was pointing out when she was up here. This involves public contracting, public education, and public employment. That's where this is being applied. I would suggest to the board that should be in front of the phrase and in connection therewith. The basic categories that we're dealing with here are essential. Race, sex, color, ethnicity, and national origin. That concept belongs in front of that phrase and in connection therewith. That isn't a detail. That's an essence and essential piece of this measure. To a lesser degree, and I'm going to say something a little contrary, Mr. Hobbs, to something you alluded to a moment ago, there's this definition of state that appears down below. Well, the definition of state in this measure is quite broad. It doesn't only apply to the state of Colorado, but it applies to public institutions of higher education in the state. It applies to home rule cities and counties, as I read it. It applies to any political subdivision, department, all governmental instrumentalities, at least as I read it, subject to correction by Mr. Westfall, in this state. That is not clear right now. I wouldn't contract it, as you were suggesting. I would move it up and put it right up front so it's clear to the voters that those are the things that this applies to. And finally, I am still bothered. I'm not going to belabor this point, try the patience of the board in doing this. There is a concept in here of legalizing a new form of discrimination, that bona fide qualifications issue. I don't know how you put that up front. But it ought to be disclosed, and it ought to be up high so people realize if they're voting for this thing, they're not misled, that they are, in fact, constitutionally sanctioned for that. Finally, about two or three other points, and I'll go through very quickly.
I was about 2 o'clock.
And here I'm not speaking about, you'll have an opportunity. I'm not speaking about being up in front of that phrase. The things I've just mentioned, I think, are essential critical elements that need to be in front of and in connection with. Mr. Hobbs, I think you raised the issue about whether this provision, this initiative, specifies remedies. What it says is that the remedies available in Section 7 for violation of this section shall be the same, regardless, as are otherwise available for violations of then-existing Colorado anti-discrimination law. So what it does is it doesn't specify remedies. It sort of incorporates remedies that may exist whenever then existing is. I don't know if then existing is upon the effective date or if it is at the time when somebody's seeking a remedy. I'm not sure. But this isn't providing or specifying remedies. This is saying whatever remedies are out there at some point in time are available here. Secondly, there's something misleading in that phrase, in that today, to my knowledge, there are no remedies for preferential treatment. So it is saying that remedies will be available for something that's being prohibited here, when in fact, to my knowledge, there are no remedies for preferential treatment today. So they're going to somehow take a remedy that exists in some capacity or another as to discrimination and apply it to preferential treatment. And given the breadth of the definition of preferential treatment, which is everything that benefits, not only disadvantages a group, there's something incongruous there about how you apply that kind of remedy to something that may do nothing but confer a benefit, like a recruitment program or a gender-based health program. There's another interesting concept in here I think needs to be disclosed somewhere, and Aaron is partially disclosed in the title, and that is that there is an exception when an action is necessary to establish or maintain eligibility for a federal program. That phrase is, the concept is limited more than that, and it's an important limit in the text of the initiative, and this is in Section 5, I believe, and that is a special program. The federal program is only subject to exception or the availability of or the action necessary to establish or maintain eligibility for the federal program only if the eligibility would result in a loss of federal funds to the state, which again means all of those various components of the state. Finally, two other quick and minor points. When reference is made to education, contracting, and employment, it needs to be made clear that this is public education, public contracting, and public employment. This has no effect, as I read it, upon private operations in that area. Finally, the phrase in line 10 that says of the state must be expanded as in the measure itself to say of or within the state, because, for example, home rule cities are not instrumentalities or governmental bodies of the state at all. They are located, however, within the state, self-contained governmental bodies, and this applies to everything of or multimedia. So that is my laundry list.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Ramey? Anybody else wish to testify on the staff drafts? Mr. Westfall, do you have any closing remarks? Yeah, I'll give you one last chance. I do have a question for you. I'd like for you to help me with subsection 7. Because I asked the question about what it means, and if I understood what subsection 7 means when you answered my question, I don't understand it now. And maybe the simple question for you is, how can we, in the title, reflect subsection 7? I think there's agreement that maybe what's in the staff draft right now is not accurate. But I'm struggling with how to suggest a revision to it because I don't understand subsection 7. I don't know whether the focus of it is that the remedies have to be non-discriminatory, whether the remedies have to be the same as those that existed prior to the enactment of the measure, or something else.
Can I just take a moment and talk with my client? And I'll be right back up. If you just give me a moment. I hope I don't unduly mangle Mr. Hobbs as the spokesperson for my client's intent here, so I'll do my best. I really think what we're getting at here is to just say, it says the remedies available for violations shall be the same regardless of, regardless of what kind of violation we're assuming, whether it's a sex-based or color-based or ethnicity-based or national origin-based, as are otherwise available for violations of then existing Colorado anti-discrimination law. What we're saying is if there's a provision on the books that says what you get back pay if you get if you can show discrimination, or you can get reinstatement, or you can get you have a cause of action that's remedial in certain ways that's set forth in state statute, or let's say it would be in the procurement code, or let's say it would be in the procurement statutes, because we're talking about public contracting. So let's say it's something that's in the labor, the state's personnel rules that would deal with public employment, public education. There may be something out there that provides for, maybe something by, one of the universities or what have you, where they have a remedy if you've discriminated against somebody on the basis of, sex or national origin or something like that, with regards to faculty appointments or something along those lines. We're just saying that whatever all that stuff is out there that's on the books today, it's still on the books. And it can be that those are remedies that would be availed to people who would then cite this measure on a going forward basis once this measure is enacted in the law. That answer your question?
Oh, I think so. You're saying the primary thrust of subsection 7 is that the measure does not specify remedies. It just, as I think Mr. Ramey used the phrase, it just simply incorporates existing remedies.
That's correct.
Or simply notes that there are existing remedies or something. I'm not even sure
right.
It incorporates
because
I'm assuming you're saying they could be changed from time to time. It doesn't freeze them.
Absolutely. The General Assembly and the legislative bodies of all those things I just talked about all make new remedies down the road.
And what about remedies for preferential treatment? Just help me tell me how that works. Is that if a remedy for an agency providing preferential treatment would be the same as the remedy, as if the agency had discriminated against somebody? I mean, I'm not quite sure it works. I'm trying to understand how that applies.
I think, obviously, even under existing law, preferential treatment can go so far as to be reverse discrimination, or it can be something. It's discrimination. I mean, it's just at some point, preferential treatment violates the Equal Protection Clause, or violates Title VII, or violates one of the other laws that exist on the books today, the 13th, 14th, 15th Amendments of the Constitution, the various federal civil rights laws. There's a whole host of laws out there that ban discrimination on the basis of particularly on your status, your racial status. But there's, Title VII, for example, in the gender context, Title IX, all those, those are all examples where today, if you do something that could be that may very well be preferential treatment on this measure, it could still constitute a violation of this host of body of laws that are designed to address discrimination. So I disagree with Mr. Ramey's point that basically all we're dealing with a brand new thing here. Preferential treatment, if it goes too far, if it's found to be actionable, is still actionable and still remediable today under existing law.
And maybe I'm just not following you. I mean, if an individual is discriminated against impermissibly,
mm-hmm.
that individual has a remedy. I don't know, damages or whatever.
Right.
But if a group is provided preferential treatment, who gets the remedy? Do you go find somebody who was discriminated against?
Mr. Hobbs, I think your comments earlier touched upon that very point. I mean, in many of these things, there are X number of slots for X number of jobs. There are X number of positions. There's X number of positions in an education setting or whatever. And if you're talking a situation where by granting preferential treatment you've created winners and losers, the losers obviously have a remedy today if, in fact, it's actionable, if it violates one of these areas of substantive anti-discrimination.
Domenico.
Well, I think this is probably dangerous to share my epiphanies out loud like this, but I
go for it.
It seems to me that this has brought out for me effectively what's the effect of this is to make a constitutional statement that from now on, in the people of Colorado, in their constitution, have accepted your definition that discrimination and preferential treatment are effectively the same thing, over Mr. Ramey's interpretation that these are diametrically opposed things. And so effectively this measure is a constitutional statement that the people of Colorado are adopting this interpretation that discrimination and preferential treatment are the same thing, and we don't want any part of either one of them. Mm-hmm. And in that case, all that the remedy section is doing, as I see it, is saying the legislature can't then go and play games and recreate this sort of differential treatment of the two things by saying, well, fine, it says there's no, fine, then we've got this new section 33 or whatever it is that outlaws preferential treatment, but there's no remedy for it.
Mr. Domenico, may I just hit that point?
Sure.
Because that potentially is a dangerous issue for us with respect to what Mr. Ramey will in all likelihood argue in the Colorado Supreme Court. It's my understanding that nothing in Section 7 is intended to be substantive in its scope. The organic power of the measure is only in Section 1. We're not trying to jerry-rig in some way or another what legislative bodies can or cannot do by the way they interpret Section 7. Section 7 is really nothing more than these other measures, which are designed to address what some would argue is a problem, or how does it fit? How does this dovetail with this existing body of law? It's my understanding of this measure these are just attempts by the proponent to try to address these obvious concerns that have taken place. And this is not the first state. This has been done in a number of states, and it's been tested in a number of different contexts. And there's been a lot of litigation. There's a Prop 209 in California over this measure. And so there's a whole body of law out there. But, all of this, these other provisions are just merely designed to sort of say, we're not trying to deal with folks when you have legitimate job qualifications, and we're not trying to, getting to Section 7, if the legislative bodies want to enact rules or law that provides remedies for discrimination, this measure is not, we're not trying to impact that. We're just saying whatever those remedies are, they can be used, for this kind of discrimination that's set forth in subsection 1.
Exactly. That's exactly what I probably misled you. That's exactly what I saw it as saying, that the remedies, the legislature can always change the remedies. It could abolish all remedies for anti-discrimination law. It just can't pick and choose between applying certain remedies for certain kinds of discrimination versus other kinds of discrimination, that the remedies have to apply across the board. That's all I was saying. Okay. Then I actually think, personally, on to just stick with that, I wouldn't mind just deleting the remedy section. We often have measure titles that don't say anything about the remedy. This doesn't seem to be a major issue to me. I think taking it out is actually better than saying specifying remedies, because it really doesn't specify remedies. It just specifies that the same remedies apply across the board.
Subject to my client flashing me a stare that says that she's about to disagree with me, I think the proponents would agree with that, if that's what the board would like to do.
I would prefer taking it out, I guess. If I had some better language, but I don't have any good language that kind of captures what I understand that provision to provide. But
maybe the opponents on their motion for rehearing can suggest something for 2 weeks hence.
Mr. Carton? And
I think that probably if I had to modify that language, I'd probably go with the repeat what's in the measure in the title approach. But I'm good with leaving it out, but I also have a suggestion if you wanted to move forward with modifying that language. But again, if it's the preference to remove it, I agree that I don't think as it's written right now it's accurate. I think it can be fixed, but I'm also good with removing any reference to the remedies in the measure, and if that's the proponent's take
Carton,
on it.
Since we're already going to be spending some time on this point, I suspect on rehearing, I think for the purposes of today, deleting it may be the preferred measure. And if the deletion of that creates a misleading thing, or there's something that the opponents feel is overwhelmingly has to be in there, that at least it provides a starting point for having that discussion again at
Thank
the rehearing.
You.
So let's, was there anything else, Mr. Westfall? Or I think you were responding to some of the, I think, in fact, I had asked you, I started out with, brought you back up with a question, and if you don't have any other comments, then I'll turn to board discussion on the staff draft.
That would be fine.
Thank you. Are there suggested changes to the staff draft?
Well, I'll move that we delete the specifying remedies clause that starts on line 10, measure on line 11.
I'll second that. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. I'm actually probably okay with, although I expressed some concern, but I just want to say I'm probably okay with the expression of the single subject and the reference to preferential treatment in line 3. I'm not planning to suggest any changes there, but I'm open to suggestions from the board.
Let me just make a statement about that. I think I'm also okay with it. I mean, I've got some questions about this. And I frankly find the idea that somehow whether we have a conjunction in there or not as defining whether it's a single subject ridiculous. I don't see how that would affect it, should affect the analysis of the single subject one way or the other. That said, as I say, it does seem to me that the point of this is to declare essentially that the state is adopting this broad definition of discrimination, which includes what comes later. And I think that leaving it this way effectively captures what's going on. And so I'm okay with it as is, I think.
Mr. Carden?
And I don't have much to add to that. I agree with both of you. The case law tells us that although broad, a title can meet the single subject requirement as long as it is not misleading. I'll go back to my original comments. I think that this particular title is broad enough to encompass the preferential treatment concept. And as stated, is in my mind, is not misleading given the content of this measure, although I'm sure Mr. Ramey would vehemently disagree with that. But that's kind of where I'm coming from, is that I think it is broad enough to cover the subject of the measure, and that it is not a misleading statement of the single subject in the title. And I also, again, I appreciate Mr. Ramey's arguments as far as preferential treatment, as far as the term preferential treatment goes, and the potential of that being viewed as a catchphrase. But I'm going to disagree with that, and I think, although I can't articulate specifically, I do think that the use of the term in this particular title, based on how it appears in the measure, is distinguishable from the catchphrases that the Supreme Court found in the bilingual cases. And my last comment, jumping ahead, would be on lines, the definition of state, I'm kind of leaning towards leaving that in there. That would be my take on this, kind of given Mr. Ramey's comments. And also, again, the content of the measure, to me, it seems helpful and relevant and integral term, kind of an integral provision of the measure. And I would leave that in there in response to your.
And I agree with that. I actually, though, might in suggest a change. We'll kind of jump around here a little bit, but with respect to the definition of state, based on something that Mr. Ramey pointed out, that maybe line 10, we need to say government instrumentalities of or within the state. And I think it seems to me that is significant, that it's not necessarily instrumentalities of the state, but it's government instrumentalities within the state. And that's what the measure says.
I think that I agree. I agree that the definition should stay in, and that's a useful change.
I'll move that change, the insertion of or within, in line 10.
I'll second it.
Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. I'd like to suggest, I think Mr. Ramey pointed this out, but it was a concern of mine as well, a change in line 4 and 5. I know the drafter thought that the word public towards the end of line 4 would modify employment, education, or contracting, but I'm not sure that that's clear. So I would suggest saying public employment, public, or maybe that was Ms. Phillips, I can't remember now, but public employment, public education, or public contracting, just to be clear that the word public modifies all three of those things.
I'd move that.
I'll second then. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Suggested changes to the staff draft?
The only other, I think the other issues Mr. Ramey brought up were in line, it was on line 7, I guess it still sort of is, of maybe just changing eligibility for a federal program to eligibility for federal funds or something like that. That I think he, I'm not sure that's important one way or the other, but subsection 5 does limit itself only to ineligibility that would result in a loss of funds, and so just to avoid a potential technicality bringing it down, I'm not sure it's a bad idea to change it eligibility for federal funds. I don't know if the proponents have a reason to object to that.
I think I'd support that change. Maintain eligibility for federal funds would be part of the clause.
Right.
I'll move that.
I'll second it.
Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. And I have a question. I'm trying to remember our discussion here, but with respect to the bona fide qualifications based on sex, I think, Mr. Domenico, you were pointing out this doesn't really authorize those. It just simply says the measure doesn't affect those. And I'm trying to think through whether what we have in the title is accurate when it says that it allows an exception to the prohibition when qualifications based on sex are reasonably necessary. Is that accurate, do you think?
You know, my personal feeling is that part of the title is unnecessary, given that I think that's a pretty limited issue. As I read the title, I think the title is accurate. I mean, it uses what are terms of art, I think, but it does allow, I mean, I think saying nothing and not prohibiting bona fide qualifications is this essentially the same as allowing an exception.
And I'm okay with it. I also had wondered about whether it was necessary to retain that language, but I'm okay with it, unless there's some strong feeling about changing it.
My only question on that clause is whether it's a little, I mean, there's really two exceptions that it's referring to, and maybe it'd be a little clearer saying allowing exceptions, because there's the bona fide qualifications exception and then the federal funds one, and maybe it'd just be a little clearer to say allowing exceptions. Just to make it clear, there's, if you can make it through the first part, there's a second exception coming.
I would move that change.
So I would delete an on line 5 and add an S at the end of exceptions. I'll move that that change be made.
I'll second that. Any discussion? Mr. Garten?
I'm sure I understand what you're doing here. And the reason you're making exception,
well,
plural,
between the two semicolons on 5 and 7, there's an exception saying that there's an exception allowed for these bona fide qualifications, and then there's another exception when action is necessary to establish or maintain eligibility for federal funds. And so I don't think it's necessarily misleading as it was. I think it just is a little clear that these are two separate exceptions. I mean, they're in separate sections in the thing. So that's my only point, is let the reader know they aren't tied together. The bona fide qualifications is not tied to the federal funds. That's all.
Thank you.
Further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Any other revisions to the staff draft? If not, is there a motion to adopt the staff draft as amended?
I'll make that motion.
Second.
And let's take a look at how we would read. And for the record, I'll read it into the record while we think about whether we're done. The title would read as follows: An Amendment to the Colorado Constitution Concerning a Prohibition Against Discrimination by the State, in connection therewith, prohibiting the state from discriminating against or granting preferential treatment to any individual or group on the basis of race, sex, color, ethnicity, or national origin in the operation of public employment, public education, or public contracting, allowing exceptions to the prohibition when bona fide qualifications based on sex are reasonably necessary or when action is necessary to establish or maintain eligibility for federal funds, preserving the validity of court orders or consent decrees in effect at the time the measure becomes effective, defining, quote, state, unquote, to include the state of Colorado, agencies or departments of the state, public institutions of higher education, political subdivisions, or governmental instrumentalities of or within the state, and making portions of the measure found invalid, severable from the remainder of the measure, period, with the understanding that the same changes would be made in the ballot title and submission clause that follows, except that it'll be in the form of a question. Any further discussion about the staff draft as amended? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. That completes action on number 31 and completes the board's agenda for today. The time is 3:40, and we are adjourned. Thank you.
So on the off chance there are